Welcome to the Quintessential Being podcast. This is a space that shifts your perspective and updates your mind so it's clear and free. Using a unique lens to view both your brain and body, we dissolve the stuckness, the behaviors, thoughts, or emotions that just aren't working for you through conversations, strategies, and story. Come think with me, Nikki Vox, in a whole new way that will revolutionize, reorganize, and rewrite what's possible for you. Let's go. My love, are you in for a treat today? I am interviewing the man, the myth, the legend that is Dr. John Connolly, founder of Rapid Resolution Therapy. If you don't know what that is, let me hook you up. RRT, as it's commonly called, is a therapy that clears mind of negative beliefs. It reorganizes mind to see new possibilities, opportunities, and solutions by freeing up energy from stuck emotional pain. It stops mind from regretting the past and or dreading the future so that negative habits or painful emotions are replaced by positive feelings and actions. Yes! You'll find that freed from the grip of past events, this blocked energy is released so that physical and emotional healings take place. Once cleared, this desired change is automatic and lasting and powerful as fuck, might I add. Dr. Connolly is a mind wizard, basically, and to witness his magic when working with people is to witness miracles, truly. I'm in the process of bringing this man to Australia for an in-person event, so watch this space. In the meantime, please, without further ado, let me welcome Dr. John Connolly. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Connolly. Thank you so much for coming on. I feel like an excited little school kid on Christmas Eve because I get to speak to you about all things RRT. You have shifted my world like nothing else. Before we hit record, I was telling you that I've been around the personal development block. I've done a thing or two to really heal my brain, fix my brain, shift and transform, and nothing has touched me and transformed me and transcended my own bullshit like rapid resolution therapy. I think you are a complete wizard. So thank you for joining us today.
Well, now you've filled me up with goosebumps, girl.
Well, good. You deserve it.
Oh, my goodness. That's just so much, but thank you. Yeah. And I'm excited to be with you, and apparently you might have a friend or two up in Australia that can listen in while we're chatting. So
yeah, that's the aim of the game here, to bring you to Australia and like bring you into more hearts and ears, because I think your work needs to be seen and heard by so many more people. But John, I love that you are disrupting the mental health industry, the coaching industry, the personal development industry by saying that you don't have to feel it to heal it. And you don't have to relive your trauma to, you know, to move past it. So tell us how and why RRT is really different in that way, because I think that is such a unique point of difference.
The way that people in the mental health industry seem to understand what's going on that causes someone to continue to be troubled by an event when the event has finished is the mental health professional is likely to think that the event caused a certain emotional reaction, but that because of the situation, the reaction couldn't really be felt or expressed. So their sense then is that emotions triggered by earlier experiences are stuck, and the solution would be that they be released. I don't think these people are looking to hurt anybody. And I really believe they sincerely want to make a difference and lift people's mood and spirits. But there's that view. That would mean if you still were troubled 3 years later after having been raped. That the problem is that some of the feelings about the rape didn't yet get fully expressed. Or if you still continue to be troubled 3 years later because the death of someone who you were very close to, why does it continue to trouble? Well, because it hasn't been fully released. And to release it, it must be expressed. And to express it, it must be felt. And so a large part of what seems to be happening is that people are encouraged to kind of go back and feel the pain that they didn't have the opportunity to feel at the time. So for instance, a group for people who are grieving is probably going to be encouraging folks in the group to grieve. And that would mean if you're in that group and you hear somebody else talking about something troubling her, ideally, you then become troubled, but not out of your compassion for her, but because what she experienced triggered you. And then, of course, what you're experiencing will trigger somebody else. And then the group is considered successful if there was a lot of emotion being expressed. So at one point, Nikki, that made some sense to me. It didn't sound totally crazy. Somebody said, come on, if somebody's being raped, do you think that they have an opportunity to be getting in touch with their feelings and making sure they're expressing themselves? She's getting raped. She's probably preoccupied with staying alive. And so then what happened to all the feelings? Because she didn't have time to feel them. And so that becomes the mission, to express and release them. I have a dramatically different view of that. And so I suggest we look at things in a particular way, and at the beginning of meeting with somebody, and then we share a different perspective. And here's the perspective that I would share. Mind causes emotion, sensation, thought, impulse, and habit in order to cause a behavior. Mind is concerned primarily about survival. To get survival to take place, mind needs to get things to happen. We can divide those into two categories, internal, external. Internal, digestion, circulation, nervous system activity. External, walk into the kitchen, make a sandwich, take a bite. So the things happening internally are happening well enough that you and I are meeting today, but mind has those tools to cause a behavior. So what I believe then is if somebody's experiencing emotion, sensation, thought, impulse, habit, it's being caused by his mind in order to cause him to do something, not in order to cause him to feel badly, just in order to cause him to do something. Well, then where does the feeling badly come? Because so many people who I meet with as we begin tell me they feel really bad. And now if we take this viewpoint, what's causing the really bad feeling is his mind. So if we think of it that way, he's miserable and his mind is making him miserable. And I would say, well, yeah, he is miserable and his mind is making him miserable. But then comes the question, well, does your mind really want you miserable? And when we think of that, I mean, where would be the payoff? So no, the mind is not looking for you to be miserable. Your mind is not looking for you to be miserable. Well, didn't you just say it was making him miserable? Yes. Well, wait a minute. Didn't you just say it's not trying to make him miserable? Yes. Well, I don't get it then. How come it's making him miserable if it's not trying to make him miserable? It's not trying to make him miserable. It's simply trying to cause him to do a particular thing, behave in a particular way, do something. And mind continuing to attempt to cause the behavior without it causing the behavior is what causes the misery. So you talk to your girlfriend and she's in a great deal of pain, and she says she's in pain because her cat died last month. The way everybody's going to think of that is the thing that's causing the emotional suffering is death of cat. I'm going to ask that we view it in a different way, not because that's wrong, but because I don't have any access to that. There's nothing I can do to make it so your cat didn't die a month ago. But what I can get access to is the way your mind is working at the moment. And it's the way the mind is working at the moment that's causing all of the emotion in order to cause something. So mind has two things it can do to cause a behavior. Think of a remote control. It's only got two buttons. Top button makes somebody feel really good. Bottom button makes her feel somewhat restless. With these two buttons, we can control everything. So if somebody brings you this elephant and says, Nikki, you're going to need to control this elephant for us. And you say, how do I control a great big elephant? And the guy says, well, here's the remote control. You can see it has two buttons. And there you go. Well, what do I do with the buttons to control an elephant? Oh, the top one will make her feel good. The next one makes her feel kind of restless. Well, why would I want her to feel good? Well, maybe she's doing something that you like and you want her to keep doing it. So there you got your top button. But if there's something you'd like her to do and she's not doing it, then you push the bottom button, makes her feel a little restless, so she'll start doing other things. Watch, and when she does the thing you want, push the top button. It works. There's a mother elephant, and you see she's got a little baby, and the baby is exuberant and way ahead of her, and you're concerned, so you push the second button. She feels a little restless and begins doing something she hasn't been doing. And then when you notice she's doing what you'd like, which is moving more quickly, you jam on that top button, which makes her go, oh, this feels good. I'll keep doing it. So now she's moving more quickly. You push the top button, keep her doing it, and maybe even get her doing it more. And there you have total control over the elephant. Two buttons. Guy comes to you and says, Nikki, we have another one with three buttons. Oh, what can I do with the third button? Oh, the third button will just make her feel miserable. So there you go. Well, what would I do with it? Well, you know, maybe you want her to do something. So you got your top button, your middle button, and one to make her miserable. Well, I don't know how to make her do anything by making her miserable. She's just probably going to just start moaning or something. That seems like a useless button. Mind is never trying to make us miserable. It's attempting to cause a behavior, generally a behavior that doesn't need to take place, that's there to address something that isn't in existence, and attempting to cause an action that would be completely impossible. And so when mind causes this thing, pushes number two button, and it doesn't work, what mind does there is pushes it again. It didn't work that time. but this one should work. Let me push it again. And the more primitive mind doesn't get, well, I've already pushed it twice. Guess that ain't going to work. I don't know what to do here. Don't have another button, but I'm not going to bother with that one. I already tried it. Mind says, no, this key is supposed to open this lock. So I'm going to try. And if it doesn't open, I'm going to try it again. And that can go on endlessly. And that is why people are experiencing terrible emotional pain, and nobody is teaching people, or hardly anybody is teaching people, how to manage this so that the pain is gone. And what we do gets the pain to be gone. I mean, it gets it to be gone really quickly and completely, and it doesn't require more pain in order to not experience pain, whereas these other methods seem to be requiring that. I'd like to have this down as a little elevator talk more precisely than I do, but I guess what I'm saying is our human minds, we're running the beta version. It has not been perfected. We get the beta version of the application because that's cool. It'll do these interesting things. The reason not to get the beta version is because it's not perfected. It's going to screw up. We've got minds that are running the beta version all over the place. If I forget that for a moment, I need only look at the cover of the newspaper. By the way, any newspaper anywhere in the world, any day of the week, all you have to look at is the cover to know that humans seem to be significantly dysfunctional. Not only are humans living with incredible emotional pain, engaging in behaviors that destroy their own bodies, but they seem intent on blowing each other up and finding ways to threaten the existence of the whole planet. So there's a dysfunction. That's why it's happening. That's the bad news. The good news is we've figured out how to redo this system so that it works remarkably better than it would out of the box. So that person is thinking about a wonderful experience she had with her cat and feeling warm and loving and just like, you know, it's so great to be thinking about my beautiful cat. So that's where I'm liking that to be. Or guy broke up with her. Well, what's making her so miserable? Her mind. Why? And here's interesting. Her mind's making her miserable because it's trying to get her to do something a few months earlier in order to cause him to have continued to be interested in her previously. Something that, of course, can never happen. So it, again, keeps trying that key. And as it keeps trying it, it's causing all of this deep emotional pain, this kind of a deep tearing. And that person is likely to go to somebody from the mental health world who will tell them that the solution is more pain, a lot more pain, over perhaps years of more pain, and trying to remember past pain and relating it to current pains. And I mean, very bright, well-intended, brave, courageous people are living lives of incredible misery, I think, promoted by the mental health industry and, well, more and more the coaching industry, the metaphysical industry. The whole freaking people change industry seems to be based on some crazy belief that the solution is to feel bad and then you'll feel better. So that's too long an answer to your lovely, simple question, but That's as tight as I could make it.
Well, I don't think that's too long at all because I love the way that you describe things and it's so simple and makes so much sense. Like when it's coming out of your mouth that you're just like, of fucking course. Like, of course. But so thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Because I think that really is going to
It
land
might
with
be
so many.
simple, Nikki, but it's incredibly different.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a language that would be so much easier for you to learn because it only has 100 words. And somebody might say, well, that's a lot easier. Well, it's not easier than doing what you already know how to do. And so this way of thinking about things really is challenging, but we find it happening. We can get people to do that. Another difference, my friend, between what we're doing with RRT and what is going on in the rest of the universe is that we believe getting people better is absolutely our responsibility. And if I met with somebody and she was experiencing grief, and at the end of the meeting, she was still experiencing grief, I would know the problem was that I didn't have enough skill to get her better. And I would tell her that. And I would then search for somebody who has the key for this lock for her. But that's not ever done. People are told they're supposed to get themselves better. And then if they don't get themselves better, they're blamed. And,
They're resistant or they're not willing enough. Like, God, I hate that from the personal development world. You're not taking enough responsibility.
in Australia, Nikki, do the schools, when you go to school, like you're in ninth grade or something, do they give you like grades? Do they ever take, when you were in school, did they ever tell you you had to pass in something you wrote? Did they then give it back to you later? Did they write on it at all? Do you remember what color they wrote in?
Red.
And did they circle and underline sometimes?
And crush it
Did they
out and
circle
fuck it
all of
all up.
the, did they circle all of the answers you got right?
No.
'Cause you use red to get people's attention, right? I mean, fire engines are red, police lights are red. Red gets your attention. So if they're doing that in schools, it must be they want somebody's attention. So they circle what the student did wrong in order to bring his attention to that over and over and over again. In your country, if somebody's not doing well at school, does the teacher then contact the parents and say, I'm sorry, I haven't done a good job with your son?
No.
No, it's interesting that the schools here in the United States, I think, have two purposes, one to socialize, the other to educate. But it seems that they don't think that it's their fault if they haven't done their job. So I think what I'm pointing out is the educational system has in common with the mental health system and a lot of the coaching systems that they are looking to blame the people that they weren't successful in assisting. They're looking to blame the person that they failed, even when the failures are pretty dramatic. I don't believe in Australia you have a lot of kids going into schools and shooting all the other students and teachers, do they?
No, we're very lucky like that, yeah.
Well, I don't know whether it's luck or whether you just figured out it's probably not a good idea to give assault weapons to angry 18-year-olds,
Yeah.
which we haven't figured that out. So if a student, and this is pretty edgy, but I think if a student comes and starts shooting everybody in the school, it seems like they shoot the people in the school they went to. They don't just drive down the road and pick any school and say, yeah, just go shoot some people there. They want to shoot people where they went to school.
Mm-hmm.
They go back and shoot people where they went to school. They do shoot students. They shoot teachers where they went to school. I'm waiting for the school principal to get in front of a microphone and say, I don't think we did such a good job with him. I mean, our job is to educate and socialize, and if the guy's coming back and shooting the other kids, we didn't do such a good job with either one of those things. But I never hear them take responsibility for that. And I don't hear people in the mental health industry taking responsibility for their failures. And I would like it if students were educated by teachers who can model taking responsibility for something rather than blaming everybody else. So I'm thinking that that system rivals the mental health system in terms of how incredibly dysfunctional it is. I mean, I bet some of the people who listen to you are mothers and even single mothers, yes?
Mm-hmm.
This gal called me the other day, Nikki, she's crying. And I said, what's the matter? Because I knew her. And she said, oh, God, I'm so glad I could talk to you. I'm so upset. I just got off the phone with the assistant principal of my son's school. I said, tell me. She said, well, he's in eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, yeah, what was the principal saying? What was the guy saying? He was quite irritated with me. He said my son had fallen asleep in history class.
Mm-hmm.
And they called me and told me I had to fix that. And I don't know how. Now, this particular lady works double shifts in a donut store. I mean, 12, 14 hours of selling donuts in order to make enough to go home and feed her kids and have a place to house them. And the school is calling her to fix the problem that people are falling asleep in school. I mean, people think that's normal. I mean, I want to say, I do a lot of teaching, Nikki, and if I start noticing people are falling asleep in my class, I know the problem is that I am not interesting enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start jumping up and down and making some noise there and saying some pretty provocative stuff to wake people up, because I don't like lecturing to people that are sound asleep either. But it doesn't occur to the school system that it's in their wheelhouse of responsibility to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being interesting, they bribe children to memorize facts that are on the periphery of the actual message of things, and they bribe them by giving them, if you do great, we're going to give you a B. Well, isn't that frickin' nasty dandy? I feel so good now I have a B. But maybe that's not very motivational to
yeah,
me.
Not exactly inspiring.
Oh, okay.
Is it?
Well, then if you don't do well, we're going to give you a D or an F. And that better motivate you, because that's all designed to make you miserable.
Yeah.
Miserable, ostracized, thrown out of the community, shamed in front of people. So we bribe or punish in order to get people motivated, rather than hire teachers based on their ability to be motivational and exciting and give interesting talks and bring things to life for people.
Yeah.
So I'm going back and forth, and I know I'm all over the place with education and mental health and all these things. But the thing in common is we could make a big difference and make things better if the people whose job it was to take care of things at least realize it's your job.
Yeah.
If your patient, your psychologist, your patient is still depressed, well, that means he wasn't ready to change. No, it means you didn't do a good job. So those are some of the differences, my friend. We're looking to be able to get people living their best lives and do it in a way that's fun and interesting and exciting, that doesn't involve a whole lot of pain or a whole lot of money.
Yeah. And on that point, John, I love that you infuse like so much fun and humor. Like often, you know, I've been on quite a few calls, like solution calls and stuff, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but you really do infuse humor where someone's shifting something like horrific and tragic that happened and they're often laughing along the way. Can you tell us like how you kind of weave that magic through and yeah, bring that lightness?
Oh, sure. There are a lot of people that are pretty good at being funny. I kind of like to think I'm one of them. But there are a lot of people that are really good at being funny. Most of them aren't teaching school. Most of them aren't treating people for grief. Most of them aren't helping people overcome post-traumatic stress syndrome or whatever it is. So I think people will be, I can move things along and make shifts within somebody's mind more easily if there's lightness rather than heaviness. I mean, think of you want to move these things around in your house and they weigh 800, 900 pounds each. Nope, we shift that. They weigh 8 or 9 pounds each. Well, isn't that going to be easier to move it when it's lighter? So if humor makes things lighter, then it makes it easier to move them. But you're not going to convince people in the mental health industry of that, because they really believe that if you started being humorous, you would end up keeping people away from feeling miserable. And if they can't get them to feel miserable, they don't think they'll get them to be better. So we're really at such cross purposes. If somebody from that industry wants to have like a case conference with me, they like to call the people they work with cases. I have an interesting case this afternoon. Oh, that's lovely.
Exactly, in that voice too.
Too bad you didn't end up with like a man or a woman or a child. They just give you cases, don't they? And if you're thinking that the way to solve the problems of your interesting case is to guide her into more misery, well, you probably don't spend a lot of time learning to be funny.
Yeah.
But I don't think misery is the key to well-being.
Yeah.
What a concept, huh? And so I do think that people who are training with me and learning to make wonderful shifts happen with other people are also learning how to be playful, how to be funny, how to be engaging, and also how to be interesting. I would like people I train, after you're done with a meeting with that person, and you're somebody we're training, and I'm so lucky to have you in it, and I see your person leaving from the meeting and saying to her friend, "That thing, it was so much fun. I mean, I thought I was going to piss myself being in there with her. She is so funny." Yeah, well, that's good. But what about, you know, how your boyfriend broke up with you and shit like that? And, he's out of the way. And rumor has it there are a few other guys out there, so I'm about to go get one. I mean, why not? Why not just lift people up? The thing is, yes, all that's doable. No, it's not easy to learn to do it, but it's worthwhile to learn to do it, because the results are phenomenal.
Yeah.
So that's what is so motivational to be teaching this way of thinking about things.
Yeah, I love that so much. A little earlier on, you talked about like energy being released, and I feel like that's a phenomenal thing that happens with RRT. I'm wondering whether you can explain the kind of mechanism, like where, you know, when someone's been ruminating on something or stuck in the past or just feeling that heaviness that you were like alluding to there, right? Like I know that I've felt exhausted from it and extreme fatigue from things. And when that energy is freed up through any of the RRT processes or practices, oh God, that's such a good feeling. So I'm wondering whether you can speak to like that mechanism and how it works. And so we can kind of like wrap our brains around it a little bit better too.
Okay. So if there is that kind of heavy, repetitive thought process, mind is at that point attempting to cause her to do something in a way that's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And there, the response to doing something that isn't working is to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I said to you, hey, I'm going to give you a key to get in this door. Now, it's the wrong key. But your assignment, young lady, is to try to open the lock with it.
And I've been good at that, John. I've been good at it.
and we need you to be trying to do it for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Imagine how you would feel 3 hours later trying to turn the same key. How about 5 hours later? How about if you find out, well, no, you got to do it all day tomorrow, too. How about if you realize, well, no, I've actually been doing it for the past 6 months. All day, every day, I try turning that key. That's what's going on. The mind is attempting to cause something to happen over and over and over again. That's where the heavy thing comes from. And basically, mind is probably trying to get you to do something that you don't need to do about something that isn't even in existence. And that's a key for turmoil. If all day his mind is charged with trying to do something in a way that won't work, could never work, but the thing doesn't even have to be done anyway, and all day long that's going to be the thing in mind, it sounds bizarre, but if anybody listening to you ever went through a breakup, mm-hmm, and had these thoughts reoccur over and over, oh my God, what's he doing now? What's he doing? And okay, next week, good morning, it's Wednesday again. Yes, I know. So how are you doing? And horrible. What are you thinking about? What's he doing? And basically, mind is attempting to cause her to do something, to cause him to be more interested in her previously. You can't possibly get somebody to be more interested in you previously. So it's spinning in the wrong direction. What's the solution? Because that's what you ask. How do you release the energy? I want to establish communication with this deeper part of mind,
mm-hmm,
so that it will do what I ask.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, I feel miserable. Why is that? Well, because when my friend was dying in the hospital, I drove over to see him, but I had a situation where, because I hadn't checked my gas tank, I ran out of gas. It took an hour to get the thing remedied, but when I got there, he was dead. So what do you think? Oh, I think I should have been more careful. Yeah. So go ahead and think that. Okay. There you go. So what do you think? I should have been more careful. Well, you already thought it. Yeah. So why should have been more careful? Now you just thought it three times while we're sitting here. When your mind is saying you should have been more careful with the gas gauge, it's trying to get you to have been.
Mm-hmm.
You can become careful, but you can't become careful in the past. And so that's an example of this thing causing mind to just spin in terribly painful ways on and on. There's a solution. And it's fun. So people probably, might have some interest in learning more about this. There's a couple of things somebody could do. May I mention them?
Absolutely. Please.
There are two books that are out and available. One is called Life Changing Conversations, and one is called Grief is Not Sacred. Mm-hmm. We're working on a third, but those two are available currently. They describe exactly how shifts happen word for word. So you'll see how it was done. In the Life Changing Conversations book, the first story is about a young lady who was having violent seizures 5 and more times a day. She had to wear a helmet on her head all the time so she wouldn't crack her skull open, and couldn't walk without like a walker or sometimes a 3-pronged cane if it was a good day, and had been doing everything to get better. Top-rated medical and mental health clinics, lots and lots and lots of attention to it. And we met once, and she never had a seizure after that, and went on doing TED Talks and has become an extraordinary healer. How did that happen? And the answer is, in that book, Life Changing Conversations, you read word for word how it happened, exactly how it happened. So if you want to know how something like that happens, there it is. There's no mystery to it. Here it is. And then we continue to show how other kinds of things that cause people to be relieved and at ease can happen consistently.
And you're an amazing wizard.
Quickly.
You're a wizard of the mind.
Yeah.
John, you're also such a generous man and have a solutions call on Monday night US time, which is Tuesday morning Australian time. And it's completely free and anyone can show up and anyone can register. And I've linked the registration page in the show notes. But can you just tell us, you know, what someone can expect from showing up to that call?
Because it's every Monday at 7 Eastern time, but it's twice a month in the afternoon on Thursdays here, which maybe would be better for your folks so they can check when this is. Mm-hmm. It's called Solutions. And there are a ton of people who, they're not going to come in and see me individually. They're not going to come in and be trained in this, but they're suffering. And they might not do that, but they're willing to jump online and at least listen to somebody else address something. Mm-hmm. So in this group, I'm working live with people who raise their hands, and they describe a situation where there's been some significant stuckness, often where there's been some real emotional pain. And it's my job to do what we can do to get that person much better. But in Solutions, it's free. I want to get to many people so I don't spend hours with one person, minutes instead. But it's a good way to kind of get into the RRT waiting pool and see what's going on. It's exciting to find people are writing to us saying that they are much better, but that I never addressed anything with them. And they're much better because something they heard as I addressed something for somebody else that just clinked in and worked.
And I can personally attest to that, like listening to so many different, you have such a varied and vast, like people come with lots of different issues, problems, behaviors, patterns, all that stuff. And I have personally got so much shift from listening to different things and applying it to myself. You know, that's the great thing about RRT. You really can listen, imagine it to be yourself and experience the shift and transformation.
That's
anyway.
So kind of you. And I'm so glad that we've been able to make a difference in your amazing life, and through you, a ton of other lovely people who follow your podcast and get to experience such a difference. And you're a great host. I mean, it became instantly fun.
Good.
When I met you. You're filled with smiles. You're goofy. You're silly. You're sexy. You're amazing.
Thank you very much.
So I'm having a good day here talking
good.
To you.
Good to hear. I love that. Thank you so much for coming on. Before I let you go, can you please let everyone know, like, where can they find more RRT online, on Instagram, in case they want to, well, I know they will want to dive more into the RRT world and everything that is Dr. John Colleen, because you are just a phenomenal man. Thank you so, so, so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, dear. The website is rapidresolutiontherapy.com, and that would be the place to go to really begin unlocking the treasure. There is that website, the opportunity to download free resources, the beginning chapters of the books that I wrote. There's a recording on mind-body healing and immune enhancement people can listen to again and again. We're hearing phenomenal shifts happening for people who do that. And all kinds of things to meander through and listen to and learn. And then if somebody wants to dive even deeper, you know, we'll get somebody on the phone with you and find out, well, where you've been stuck. Who do we have that we know would be really good at having the key for that lock? How can we hook that up in a way that is pleasing for you, affordable to you, and enables change to begin taking place? So that's stuff people can do by just checking in with us there.
Perfect. John, thank you so much for chatting with me today. I have loved every second.
Mickey, you're so kind, dear. I'll be just wishing you well forever. You're just amazing.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening today, my love. If you found this episode useful and valuable, I would love for you to share it with someone who needs to hear it. If you want to continue the conversation with me, you can find me over at Instagram @_NikkiVox_. And to land this podcast in more hearts and ears, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to it. Thank you so much for being here, and until next time, big love.